Hello and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm Ann Gordon here with my friend and chavruta, your Dana Azband, our daf of the day, Masechet Bava Metzia, daf Yud, page 10. We're chugging our way through this beginning of this Masechet. We're still dealing with the responses to the first Mishnah. Here we have, I'm on the towards the bottom of Amud Aleph, Rav Nachman, Rav Chista, the Amar Travaihu. Rav Nachman and Rav Chista said together, or they both said, so if yesterday we spent all this time talking about how one who does a formal act of acquisition on behalf of one's friend, meaning on behalf of somebody else, and that does work to affect the transfer of ownership to the friend, to the other person. In this case, Rav Nachman and Rav Chista both say that you do that, you lift that item on behalf of the other person does not acquire the item. They do not, it does not bring about that ownership. My Tama. So what's the reason for that? Meaning they're saying something different from what we saw in the previous daf. They tofes leval chov b'makom shechav l'acherim, v'tofes leval chov b'makom shechav l'acherim lo kana. So the rationale is like this. They say it's similar to the case of somebody who will seize assets, right? That val chov, somebody who has a debt, right, has to pay. And if they don't pay, then at some point, you know, they're going to come and take his stuff in order to pay back the debt that he owes. And the claim here is, right, if what happens when you have I've left out one wrinkle. The other wrinkle is, right, he owes money, he owes whatever, to one party, and then he's also in debt to others. So now what happens, you come to grab his assets for the first issue, or to the one balcho, right, to the one creditor, and he still has that obligation to the other people. So that first creditor cannot take possession of the debtor's stuff because of all those other people. Meaning, it doesn't work that way to say, oh, I got there first, or at least the way this passage of the Gemara deals with it, is you say you have a bunch of creditors, you have a bunch of people you have to pay back. You can't just come and seize the assets when there's other people also waiting to be paid. Eidvei Rav or Rav Nachman. So Rav has an objection about this whole view of Rav Nachman. Metziat poel latzmo. They said, what about when you have an item that's a found item? It belongs to a poel, a worker, a laborer. He finds it, now it belongs to him. Like, that's how he takes acquisition. And it doesn't belong to his employer as if he then would owe it to the employer. We say, no, it belongs to him who found it at the time. What is this case talking about? Bizmancha Amarlo Bal Abait Nakesh Imi Hayom Adur Imi Hayom. So this is, we're talking about a specific case where the employer tells the worker, you know, go do thus and such job. Go weed, till for me, right, to deal with the fields. Aval, amarlo, asei mi melacha hayom mitziato shel bal habayit. Who? So meaning if he says, you know, I'm going to hire you for the day, whatever I have to do on hand today, I'll come to you. And now there's no specification of the nature of the work. And now everything he's doing basically in that day is at the behest of the employer. So then also anything he would find that day would go to the ownership of the employer, not his own, because it's like none of his time is his own. He signed it away to the person who owns the field or the farm or the whatever, as opposed to somebody who signs on to do that very specific job. And everything else he's doing, except for that specific job, he's independent. He's on his own. Okay, so now Rav Nachman has an answer. Amar lei, shani poel diadok yad bal habayit hu. You're talking about a laborer, a worker. That's a different situation because in that case, when he's in the employ of the employer, his hand, it's as if his hand is like that of the employer. It's because it's like he's a shaliach. He's sending out an emissary to go do his work for him. And it's as if he is in fact the employer himself. So he doesn't have like a separate identity in that way to be able to acquire for himself. So Rava comes back to Rav Nachman and says, one second, but doesn't Rav say, Poel yacholach zorbo afilo b'chatzi yom? A laborer, a worker can change his mind and quit that job, even though he signed on to it, even if it's in the middle of the day. Meaning there's something in this dynamic between the two of them, namely employer and worker, that is to the advantage of the worker to say that he can walk away, right? And if he can walk away, then really, how worried are we that whether he can be really acquire something to for himself as he goes about that day? So Rav Nachman says back to Rava, Amar lei kol kamad lo hadar bei ki yad bala bayadu. Okay, but as long as he didn't quit, then that's still the dynamic. He's like the agent of the employer. Ki hadar bei tam achrinahu. And then if he does quit, then we've got another rationale, right? What's the reason then? Dichtiv, because there's a verse, ki li bnei Yisrael avadim, avadai heim v'lo avadim l'avadim. This is, God, this verse in Vayikra 25, Levit chapter, oh my goodness, Leviticus chapter 25, right? Where it says, to me, to God, the children of Israel are slaves. Meaning, these are the people who worship Hashem. They worship God. They're not slaves to other slaves, meaning they're not slaves to Jews who are slaves of God. They're only slaves to God. So therefore, you can't have a Jewish person be enslaved to another Jew with a contract that he can't get out of when he wants to, which is a really interesting comment on really on a lot of things, on freedom and on the status of employment, and also the fact that we talk about an Eved Ivri, right? Somebody who puts themselves in, somebody in debt who can then kind of sign away certain amount of rights for the sake of paying off that debt. And we recognize that it's still not slavery the way we think of slavery, is a certain amount of indenturedness. Fine. Amar Chia Bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. So if we had Rav Nachman and Rav Chista before, now we've got Rav Chia Bar Abba, who says what Rav Yochanan said. We've seen Rav Yochanan before. If somebody, raises something on behalf of another party, it that in order to transfer the ownership to the other party, it works. So I had said at the beginning that our Gemara is still talking about the initial Mishnah. That was a mistake. I apologize for that. We're really talking about the Mishnah from yesterday, and that's the Mishnah where it says, it seems to suggest that acquiring the ownership via another party doing the act of acquisition, it seems to be a complicated situation there. And again, we had this example, right, where the rider says to the person walking, "Give it to me." He says, "Tanali," right? That's what the Gemara says. "Give it to me." He doesn't say "zacheli," like acquire it for me. So, "give it to me" seems that he's only going to take possession of it for real, take ownership of it when it actually reaches his possession. If he had said, "Go, take ownership of it for me. Go, I don't know, take possession," well, then that would be a whole different thing. And that seems to be like the crux of where the debate hangs at the very, like here at the end of this piece of Gemara before we go on to a new Mishnah. So I'm going to go on to a new Mishnah in a moment. Just your Dana, did you have anything you want to comment on this so far?
Yeah, I especially like the cases with the employer. Like that one to me is very interesting. I don't think we would frame it that way at all, but it's like the idea that if you're employed by a person, like they really own your time and what your actions are during that time, and it's the employer's. But I'm sure we'll think a little bit more about it.
There's a new Mishnah. It's very short. Ra'ah et ha-metzi'ah, right? You see a found item. You find something, right? It's a funny language that metzi'ah means a found item. We don't talk that way in English, right? We say you found something or you saw something that seemed to have no owner. V'nafal aleh. And so then the person who sees it, finds it, wants to take possession upon it. So he comes and like falls upon it, right? To take possession of it. And another person comes and grabs it. This is where it seems not so fair. The person who seized it is the person who takes possession of it because he used an act of acquisition, namely taking hold of it. Like draping yourself over the item that you want to own is not a way of acquiring something, even though perhaps it should be. But that's not like we know what the formal acts of acquisition are. And if you ever stumble upon something that you find in the street and it seems to have no owner and you want to take possession of it, make sure to use one of the classic kinyanim, the classic formal acts of acquisition, because otherwise you might think you've taken possession, but not really.
No, I mean, again, I think this you know, all these issues of Kenyon are just very, very interesting to see. They're not really things that we necessarily, you know, I don't know, that they're not things that I think about, but it's this idea that you can have something ownerless, right? And like, how does that become acquired? It doesn't even feel like it should be a question, right? Like, as soon as someone's even near that, of course you should acquire it. And yet it's still a question.
Right, right. I think that's a really good observation. And it leaves us, you know, as much as we've now finished this little passage, it's we're not quite resolved here.
Okay. So the way the Gemara starts off here is they have a statement by Reish Lakish. I'm a Reish Lakish Mishum Abba Kohen Bardella. So Reish Lakish said in the name of Abba Kohen Bardella. It's not somebody we've really ever heard of before. Arba Amot Shel Adam Konot Lo B'chol Makom. A person's four Amot acquire an object for him in any location. So that, in other words, if as long as a person comes within four amot of an ownerless object, he has a right to acquire that object and nobody else can grab it. So exactly like we were talking about before, the idea of having an ownerless object and sort of like just your how approximately near you are to it, you actually acquire it. And so the standard they use here are arba mayot. My taima, what's the reason? Takina Rabbanan de lo ate litznuye. So the rabbis instituted that so that people would not quarrel with one another, right? So that, in other words, it's a way that people can't encroach upon, an ownerless object that's already within four amos of another. So sort of basically saying, like, if something's closer to one person, right, within their four amos, if you're six amot away, you can't now say, like, okay, it's my object. So Amar Abai, so now we're going to have different objections to what Reish Lakish says. First, Abai comes, Moti Rabbi Chiya Bar Yosef Peah. Rabbi Chiya Bar Yosef challenges this from a Mishnah in Peah. Amar Rabba, Rabba says, Moti Rav Yaakov Bar Idi Nezikin. Rav Yaakov Bar Idi challenges this from a Mishnah in Nezikin. Okay, so what are the challenges here? Amar Abai, Moti Rav Chiya Bar Yosef Peah. So Rav Chiya Bar Yosef challenges this with the Mishnah in Peah. And this is Peah. Remember, Peah is in Seder Zoraim, so there's really no there's no Talmud Bavli on it. There's only Yerushalmi, and it's in the fourth chapter of the third Mishnah. Natal Miksad Peah v'Zarak Al Hajar. Somebody took Peah and threw it over the rest. In other words, like a person reaps part of it and then threw it over the other Peah that was still attached to the ground. Nafalo ain lo klum, right? He doesn't have any rights at all. Nafalo aleh, but if he himself fell on it, pras talito aleh, or he put his cloak over it, mavirin oto himenu, they remove it from him. In other words, the other poor people can remove him from the produce and take it for themselves, because this also is not a form of a kinyan. V'chein ba'omer shechacha, and the same applies with shechacha, right? That's like a sheaf that was forgotten to be harvested, so the poor people are allowed to take it. Now, if you say, right, that for a mode of a person acquired for him in any location, so then why doesn't his for a mode acquire the payah for him? This mission is basically saying it's very difficult to acquire payah that you haven't actually harvested, and you can't even put an object of yours on it to say it's yours. So the Gemara answers, what case are we dealing with that we hear? It's a case where he doesn't say, I wish to acquire the produce through four amot. So the Gemara says, but if the rabbis instituted it, kilo ama armai habi, right? Why does he have to say it, right? Even when he didn't say it, it's something that the rabbis instituted. So why would he have to say it? In other words, any standard method of making a kinyan is effective even if he doesn't make an announcement. So the Gemara answers, Kevan did not fell, since he fell on the produce, Gali date kedinefila nichale dikani. Then he revealed that his intention was he wanted to acquire the payah through falling on it, not through the bright barbamo li nichale dinikne. And he didn't want to do it through the four amos. And since falling out it isn't valid, and he used a different method than the four amos one, it's as if he didn't acquire it at all. So now the Gemara also tries to defend Reish Lakish. Rav Papa Amar, ki takinu le rabbanan arba me'ot ba'alma. Why did the rabbis institute this idea of acquisition of kinyan by four amot? when he's in an area that belongs to the general public. Or so, sorry, when is it? It's Ba'alma. When he's in the area of the general public. Bisadeh de'bal habayit lo takinu le'rabanan. The case of Peah, it wouldn't apply. This is in someone's private property, and it wouldn't apply at all. So what we're talking about, Reish Lakish, this takana, only applies in a Rashut HaRabim. Ba'afagab de'zacha le'rachmana begava. And even though the Torah grants a poor man rights in the field, he's only granted him rights to walk in the field and to take peah. But for it to be his courtyard, meaning that his arba amot, you know, take place in somebody else's sadeh, that's not he doesn't have rights to. So, you know, so it's interesting to see this thing with Kenyan, and specifically this idea of having this arba meot. Okay, now from here, what they're going to do is they're going to quote Rav Yaakov Bar Idi's objection, which was a Mishnah from Nezikin. Ama Rabba Moti Rav Yaakov Bar Idi Nezikin. Okay, and here's the Mishnah. Ra'at hametziyah v'nafal lo aleha. Right, so if he saw an article and fell on it, so this is quoting our Mishnah. Uva achar behezikba, and another one came and sees it. Zehi shikba zehizikba zachaba. The one who sees it, he acquired it. V'yamart abame ochaldam konot lo b'chomakom. And if you say that the four amot is what can acquire an object from in any location, niknule arbam emot amot diday. Let the first person's four amot acquire it. In other words, the first person fell on it. It was within his four amot. He should have acquired it. So the Gemara answers, again, the Gemara says, what case are we dealing with? It's a case where he didn't say, I'm going to acquire it with this four amot principle. So then the Gemara says, V'itakun rabbanan, kilo amar mai habe. So same objection they had before, but if the rabbis made this a takana that you can, you know, you can do a kinnan with this four amot rule, then why does he actually have to say it? Kevan de nafala, once he fell in it, gale data iktiki de minaflia nichle de nikne. Right. So again, the same line of reasoning we had before. When he fell on it, it shows that's how he wanted to make the kinyan, and that's not a valid kinyan. But the four amot, you know, don't count at that point. Barba amot lo nichale de nikne. Now they're going to have another way to maybe defend Reish Lakish. Rav Sheshet Amar kita kinu rabbanan besimta. When the rabbis instituted the four amot, it was only in a recessed area. So simta is like sort of a quiet area that's close to the Rashut HaRabim, you know, sort of gives people a little bit more privacy. And that's what a simta is. And that's where the four amot applies. Delo dachi rabim, it's where the public doesn't crowd. The Rashut HaRabim, dekat dachi rabim, lo takinu rabanan. But in a public area, they don't actually do the four amos because, of course, he's going to be sharing four amos with other people. And I think this is actually a very interesting thing that Rav Sheshet had to say. The one thing I want to say about that I also think is interesting is Rav Sheshet was blind. And so this idea that Rav Sheshet is commenting that people are sort of in each other's space, I find fascinating that a blind person could say that.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
Because it's like not something he sees, but maybe it's something he feels and has a different sense of space, not using vision. Okay.
I think let's throw this one out. Let's throw this one out to our co-learners here. Yes. Because I feel like, you know, let's expand the circles.
That was so interesting. Okay.
But also, but to people who have either limited vision or vision impairment.
I'm curious if anyone understands how Rav Sheshet understood this. As opposed to Rav Papa, who before said, of course, it's only in a Rashus HaRabim. And so again, he says, right, so it only applies in the Simta where there aren't public people, but in the public areas, they didn't. And then the Gemara objects to this, but Reish Lakish, when he made a statement, he said that the four almost applies in any location. And so the Gemara, which would mean to include a Rashus HaRabim. And then the Gemara answers, no, any place is meant to include the shoulders of the Rashus HaRabim, but not the Rashus HaRabim itself. So very interesting takana that they discuss here. Two very different approaches. You know, first we have the statement of Reish Lakish, but a different approach of Rav Papa, a different approach of Rav Sheshet, of how it actually applies. And again, it's this whole idea of like, your proximity to an object somehow gives you ownership to it,
but it seems you have to declare it. Like you have to say, this is how I'm, you know, this is how I am, you know, this is how I want to make my Kenyan.
I wonder to what extent we can connect this, and we're not going to do it now, but just to hold it as an idea, to intent, to all the issues of intent that we've been talking about for now years, right? But this idea that you have to have some kind of cognitive connection to the space that you're to the thing that you're acquiring. Like walking by isn't enough for your dalet amot, for your personal space to acquire something else. Like you have to have intent. You can't just, it's not happenstance.
Well, to use the Arba Amot, for sure, you have to have intent with words, it seems, which is interesting.
Yeah.
That's our DAP discussion for the day. Rangus, review us on all major podcasts. Thank you to Rabbi Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadron website. Let us know what you thought about this DAP on our Talking Talmud Facebook page. And until tomorrow, go and learn.